Welcome, everyone. This is Chris Atwood. I'm the features editor for Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise magazine and co-author of The Passion Test, The Effortless Path to Discovering Your Life Purpose. This is the Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise Passions of Real Life Legends series, where twice a month we interview individuals who've been incredibly successful at following their own passions and creating an extraordinary life. It is our hope and intentions that these interviews will help you get aligned with your passion so you can give the world your own unique gifts. This interview will appear as the cover story in the September 2009 issue of Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise magazine at www.healthywealthy.com. In his book, Awakening the Entrepreneur Within, tonight's guest described the awakening of a new passion. He said, "It was exactly in that moment when In the Dreaming Room was born in earnest, when an entirely new phase of my life began, when my inner entrepreneur was awakened and a flood of new impressions catapulted me out of my lethargy and drew me to places I had never been before, when the inventor in me woke up and thought, I'm awake." These are the words of Michael E. Gerber, who is the founder and chairman of eMyth Worldwide, the coaching, training, and education firm he founded in 1977 to transform the development of small businesses worldwide. Now approaching its 30th year, Michael's eMyth company has achieved stunning results by helping to grow more than 50,000 businesses in over 145 countries. As the author of 7 eMyth books, including the mega bestseller, The eMyth Revisited, Michael has established his revolutionary perspective as the gold standard for small business development, becoming what Inc. magazine called the world's number one small business guru and one of Business Week's best-selling authors of the past decades. Michael's passion and genius for understanding the plight of the individual entrepreneur is the crux of his tremendous appeal and success, and has formed the core value of the eMyth brand as it has evolved over nearly 3 decades. Indeed, the unique ability of Michael Gerber's eMyth perspective to help desperate small business operators overcome their entrepreneurial seizure and begin to work on their business and not merely in it is the very heart of the eMyth revolution. Now 70 years young and unquenched in his passion to transform entrepreneurship worldwide, Michael Gerber is turning his attention from the development of existing businesses to the special needs of entrepreneurs in startup. In December 2005, he launched a new venture for entrepreneurs seeking to create world-class startups called The Dreaming Room, which conducts 2.5-day intensive weekend gatherings in the United States, Canada, and the United Kingdom. Based on his experiences with entrepreneurs in these Dreaming Room events, Michael finalized his most recent book, Awakening the Entrepreneur Within. Thank you so much for being with us tonight, Michael.
My pleasure, Chris.
Now, as you know, Michael, the title of this series is The Passions of Real Life Legends. Will you share with us how your passions, the things you care most deeply about, led you to helping entrepreneurs create successful businesses?
Well, it's a long and convoluted story, but let me say it in the shortest, most direct way. My passion is to create. I've always been a creator. I've always desired to create. I've always been incapable of stopping myself from creating. Somebody in a recent meeting with me said, "Do you do this all the time?" And I said, "Yeah, I drive everybody crazy because I can't not do it. It's just a significant part of me." So my passion for creating has gotten me into all kinds of trouble and also been the source for everything that I've invented, including the company eMyth Worldwide, which started out simply as me answering a question of a friend of mine who wanted me to come and visit one of his clients on my way to someplace else doing something completely unrelated. And I went to do that, not knowing what in the world I was doing it for. In this particular context, the friend owned a small ad agency in Silicon Valley. The client was having difficulty converting leads into sales. My friend asked me to go see what was the problem. I told my friend I don't know anything about business, so I'm not sure why he'd want me to do it. And he said, "You know absolutely everything you need to know, Michael. All I'd like you to do is to just get an understanding of what's missing in this picture." So I went to visit his friend. And his friend owned a small high-tech firm, and yes, he certainly did have a problem. converting leads into sales. And as I sat there in front of him, I saw the expression on his face. Who is this guy? What in the world is he doing here? And why am I taking up this time? And Ace, my friend, said to his client, just spend an hour with Michael. Let's see what happens. I'm going to take off. I'll come back and I'll pick him up. And he did that. And I sat there. And the guy said to me, what do you know about my business? And I said, absolutely nothing. And he said, well, if you don't know anything about my business, how can you help me? And I said, I haven't a clue. But we've got an hour. And Ace ain't coming back. So why don't we find out? And I started that with the assumption that I didn't know anything about business, and I started out with the assumption that I absolutely didn't know anything about the technology that this guy was an expert at. But we started, and I began by asking him questions. And by the time we were done, it happened. And this happens again and again and again and again to anybody who is determined to discover something new, wherever he or she is. I discovered what his problem was, and I also discovered that he didn't understand what his problem was, and I also understood that Ace didn't understand what his problem was, and his problem was that he didn't understand that selling is a system. He didn't understand that. He didn't even know that. He thought that selling was what experts in the technology did. If you really understand the technology, then you should be able to sell it. But the reality is, you didn't have to understand the technology in order to be able to sell it. You had to understand the consumer in order to be able to sell it. And you had to understand what was going on in the consumer and what the consumer really wanted and what was missing in the consumer. And all of this energy just began to flow in that simple hour in which my whole life was changed.
Wow. Well, and I know that out of that has come, as we said in your introduction, a business which has helped many, many, many thousands of businesses, small businesses and startups. And it began with a book called The E-Myth, and you've now written a whole series of those. But
well, actually, Chris, it's important to know it didn't begin with the book The E-Myth.
Oh, forgive me.
The E-Myth was a product of what I learned over 8 years building what was then the Michael Thomas Business Development Program. I was Michael, my partner was Thomas, and we set out based upon this principle that I learned doing this thing with Ace, doing this thing with his advertising clients. We suddenly understood that, in fact, what was missing in all of these small businesses was a system,
yeah,
like at McDonald's. What was missing was McDonald's in all of these small businesses. And if we could teach, if I could teach every small business owner how to do what Ray Kroc intuitively knew how to do at McDonald's, then I could transform the state of small business worldwide. That was the beginning. And the E-Myth, the first book, The E-Myth, Why Most Small Businesses Don't Work and What to Do About It, was a product of a happenstance. A stringer came from Ballinger Books to attend my seminar because his fiancée was working for my company.
Uh-huh.
And he heard the seminar, and he came up to me afterwards and said, how would you like to write a book? And I said, sure. And he said, great, let me go back. And he brought back an offer to write that first book. And that book became The E-Myth. But in fact, the seminar was called Key Frustrations in a Small and Growing Business and What to Do About Them. So the E-Myth, the words, I never owned. I didn't even know about it. The stringer, the guy who was working with me and editing that first book, said, you know, this is all about the entrepreneur and the absence of the entrepreneur. Why don't we call it the E-Myth? And I said, fine. And that's how it happened.
That's that. What a great story. Thank you. Now, I want to get to your new book, but before we go there, would you be willing to share just, you know, one or two of the stories? I'm sure you've got many, many, many of them, but stories of some of the entrepreneurs that have applied the principles in the E-Myth and what's happened in the context of their businesses.
Well, there are thousands of them.
Yeah.
But let me give you a great example. There's a company that I'm sure you know of called Got Junk.
Mm-hmm.
Got Junk picks up junk. They're in the junk business.
Right.
The founder of Got Junk, when asked, how did you build this incredibly successful company, he said, I read a book. And, of course, the book was the E-Myth.
Mm-hmm.
He built his entire company on the principles. And the system that is shared in my book, The E-Myth, and later in The E-Myth Revisited, Why Most Small Businesses Don't Work and What to Do About It, he built his whole franchise on that. And he started out by driving a truck, picking up junk.
Wow.
While he was in college. And he happened to be driving through McDonald's, a drive-thru at McDonald's, when he saw a truck in front of him with a sign on the side of it said, we pick up junk. Now, the guy that I'm talking about, the founder of Got Junk, had a small pickup just like the pickup in front of him. So he's driving through the drive-thru at McDonald's, and he honks his horn at the guy in front, and he said, what do you do? How do you do that? The guy explained it. It's very, very simple. And this guy, the founder of Got Junk, decided he'd do that. Well, he starts doing that, picking up junk in his pickup truck. And somebody says to him, you know, you got to read a book. And, of course, the book was The E-Myth. And he read the book, and that was the beginning of this extraordinary company, which is spreading worldwide, amazingly successful business, all based upon the one story that you read about in the E-Myth, how to go to work on your business, not in it, how to build a business that works. So that's the perfect exemplar for what happens when somebody truly understands the perspective, the point of view that I don't take credit for. Essentially, all I did was look at Ray Kroc at McDonald's and say, how come everybody doesn't do that?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody can. And the stretch was obviously that, because Ray Kroc didn't realize that what he was doing was building a template or a model for all small businesses. Ray Kroc was simply doing what Ray Kroc knew he was going to do in order to build the most successful hamburger business in the world. Anybody can do the very same thing. So this friend Got Junk, you got it, we'll get it. Does it with a perfect turnkey system that he's replicated through franchises around the world.
Wow, fabulous. Thank you for that story. So, and, you know, it's fascinating that after, I think, 30 years of working with small businesses, helping them to create systems of having, I don't know how many you have or have had, but I know you had many, many consultants who worked with small businesses all over the world, and helping them to create those systems so that they could work on their business rather than in it. And then, as you describe in your latest book, Awakening the Entrepreneur Within, a few years ago you went through a big transition, and you describe a process of awakening that happened within you. And would you share that with us, and what made you kind of have the thought that it was time to step out of what you'd been doing so successfully so long and do something which is obviously related, but yet is a new direction?
Well, it, again, was a product of another decision. In this particular case, the decision was to bring in a new CEO. I'd never done that before.
Mm-hmm.
To grow E-Myth worldwide beyond where it was. I came to the realization that I was not going to do it. In fact, being consumed as a manager was not, in fact, what I was really born to do. My entrepreneurial spirit was diminishing, dying, working on E-Myth, but I began to realize that I wasn't going to get there doing it the way I was doing. So I brought in a new CEO, and the new CEO, of course, wanted to have control over the process, control over the company, in order to do what he was setting out to do, and which we had brought him in to do. So that meant I was free. Well, you got to understand, after 32 years of building this this extraordinary company, of focusing all of my attention on the permutations and variations of this business model that we were building, to suddenly not have it to do, and he didn't want me to do it anymore. Like I say, I'm constantly creating. In one way, that's incredible. In the other way, it's a disaster, because people get satisfied with where we've come to. They just don't simply and aren't ready to completely change what we've come to for a better way, even if it is a better way, because it means now they're going to have to learn something else again, something else again. So in effect, he didn't want me there, and I agreed. I wasn't going to be there. Now what?
Yeah.
Well, suddenly, all of that energy, I mean, you've got to understand, I think you can feel and hear the amount of energy that comes up in me about a subject I love. All of that energy was simply had no direction, no place to go. And I felt completely lost. It must be exactly how somebody feels if they retire after years of doing something.
Yeah.
I felt completely lost.
I think many of the mothers who are on the line can relate to when their children leave home, right? After many years.
Oh, absolutely.
And
yeah, I mean,
it's sort of like your child, your baby that you had been nurturing for 32 years was now gone, and you were left at home alone, so to speak.
You got it. Home alone. Now, what happens with people who find themselves home alone is oftentimes they just die.
Yeah.
I mean, they literally just do. They just quit. But of course, that wasn't up for me. What happened was I began to dream. I began to think. I began to create. I began to ask the question, now what? I don't have to do that. What am I going to do? Well, of course, I was doing stuff. I mean, I was writing books. I was speaking everywhere. But that wasn't it. That isn't entrepreneurship. That isn't creativity to me. Writing a book is a story about something I'd already thought about. Creating is something I haven't yet thought about. I'm discovering. And so I'm discovering something. I needed to discover something. Without discovering something, there's no reason to be alive. So to me, being alive means to create. That's the passion. And that's what happened when the words in the dreaming room came up. And literally, that's how things happen with me. They happen in words. So words show up even before the idea shows up. And those words show up, and they then stimulate another thought, and another thought, and another promise, and another opportunity, and suddenly a business is born. And the business that was born was the dreaming room.
Well, will you tell us a little bit about what is the nature of the dreaming room? Well, why a dreaming room?
Well, because I discovered in all the years of working with broken businesses, and essentially that's what E-Myth does. E-Myth fixes broken businesses. And they fix broken businesses by changing the mindset of the person who owns that business. Years of working with broken businesses, I mean, tens of thousands of broken businesses, every imaginable kind of broken business. And I can say as an aside, the truth is that if you walk down the street into every small business on that street, you will find that pretty much every one of those businesses is broken. It's astonishing to me, absolutely astonishing to me, how unaware people are of the fact that most small businesses absolutely don't work. They are on the path already from the very beginning of disaster. And given that, and given the fact that I've been working with them, the question is, so what's missing in those businesses? Well, one answer, obviously, is a system. Another answer is an objective, meaning what in the world are they going to do with this business? What is the end game of this business? It's often likely to say that people start a business to sell it. They just don't even think about it that way. They really start a business to create a job for themselves. So what was missing in all these client companies, I realized, was a dream. Something bigger than life, something important, something meaningful, something that moved them, something that got them up every day, something that moved them to ask the question, what's missing in this picture? And that's what I realized I could do. I could figure out a way to teach, demonstrate, inspire people to begin to dream, to actually begin to ask the question, what is missing in this world that I want to create? What's going to become the outcome, the great result of starting a new company, of being an entrepreneur? And that's what happens in the dreaming room.
Fabulous. Now, and it sounds also very much like you are connecting, you're giving people a sense of purpose or allowing them to connect with their purpose. And but before we get too much into that, in your book you talk about the five realities of the entrepreneur. And will you just share with those what you mean by that? What are the five realities of the entrepreneur and why are they important in the process of people creating a dream or a purpose for their business?
Well, in the context of the title of the book, which is Awakening the Entrepreneur Within, which is a fundamental premise of all the work that I do now. Awakening the entrepreneur within, we have to understand what an entrepreneur is. And that's why I describe the five realities of the entrepreneur, to understand what entrepreneurs are and what they're not. The first reality is the entrepreneur is an inventor. That is something that very, 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 very few, an infinitesimal number of small business owners understand. They are not really inventors. They really aren't entrepreneurs. They're what I call technicians suffering from an entrepreneurial seizure. They simply create a job for themselves, and they create a business to do that job. Well, entrepreneurs don't do that. Entrepreneurs invent, and they invent a business that is unique, that does something uniquely for a absolutely necessary reason, that it's not just to create something unique for the reality of creating something unique, but because it's going to uniquely solve a very, very important problem. So entrepreneurs are inventors. Reality two is that entrepreneurs don't buy business opportunities, they create them. So people who buy franchises aren't entrepreneurs. People who buy business opportunities aren't entrepreneurs. Technicians buy business opportunities. Managers, perhaps, buy business opportunities. And while business opportunities are, in one respect, opportunities, if they're truly an opportunity, that is, they're an opportunity for a technician who wants a job. So Subway, the franchise, brings aboard franchisees who effectively manage a Subway franchise, but they're not entrepreneurs. In other words, they're not going to create something. They're not inventors. They're technicians. They learn how to do the system, and they learn how to use the system to make a good living, and that's the extent of it. Entrepreneurs don't do that. That kills entrepreneurs. Third reality is that invention, what entrepreneurs do, is contagious. Entrepreneurs love the applause they get when a customer walks in and buys from them. Essentially, entrepreneurs live for that energy of successfully having invented a solution that successfully attracts people to it, that successfully delivers the result, and in the process, the customer loves them. Entrepreneurs love to be loved. Reality number four is that a business must grow. Most small businesses don't. Most small businesses are static. Most small businesses stay down there, right around less than $1 million in gross revenue, and will never go beyond that. They'll never go beyond that because the entrepreneur isn't truly, the founder of that company isn't truly interested in growing. He's interested in making a living. Entrepreneurs are not concerned with making a living. They're concerned with creating a revolution. And finally, reality number five is that everybody, I believe this, possesses the ability to be an entrepreneur. An entrepreneur is not some rare hybrid. An entrepreneur is the creator within. And I'm suggesting that if we're born in the image of God, as I believe we are, we're born to create. And if we're born to create, that's what entrepreneurs do. That's the entrepreneur within. That's the creator within. That's the guy, the woman, who wishes to discover something absolutely stunning and different and remarkable within himself to go and do outside.
Fabulous. So if everyone can be an entrepreneur, then maybe you can tell us about the four dimensions of the entrepreneurial personality, because I know you also discussed that. And maybe you can help us see how anyone actually can possess or make use of those four dimensions.
Absolutely. I apologize, by the way. I had my cell phone in my pocket.
Okay.
And did you hear it?
We did.
Oh, yeah. I just went on and on. Right. Person really wanted to talk. But apart from that, the four dimensions of the entrepreneur are very, very critical. In fact, it was a new process for me. I had discovered in my work with eMyth the three personalities of a small business owner, the entrepreneur, the manager, and the technician. But I'd never really delved into who the entrepreneur was. And it's interesting that I'd never done that. Because, of course, the e-myth is the entrepreneurial myth, saying that it's not an entrepreneur running a small business, it's a technician suffering from an entrepreneurial seizure. So we left it at that. The entrepreneur, what the entrepreneur does, but not who the entrepreneur is. Well, I discovered four critical components, dimensions of the entrepreneur, the first of which is the dreamer. And the dreamer is the creator, the one we've been talking about. The second is the thinker. And without the thinker, the dreamer's left to himself. There's nothing he's going to be able to manifest in the world. The thinker is absolutely critical to the dreamer. The dreamer has a dream. The thinker has a vision. The third is the storyteller. And the storyteller is critical because while I have a vision, I must also have a purpose. You talked about the purpose that I help people discover. Well, the purpose is actually the resolution of a conflict in a very specific human being on this earth, of whom there are a sufficient number in order for my business solution, my resolution of that conflict as an entrepreneur to take hold, to take root, and to grow. I have to successfully solve the most important problem some person possesses. And finally, the leader. And the leader is the one who has a mission. And the mission is to build a system. And the system that we're going to build is what the vision is all about. And the vision is all about replicating or creating the McDonald's of whatever it might be. And let me tell you, in the case of eMyth, in the case of my first company, the Michael Thomas Corporation, the vision was very, very clear, and that was to create the McDonald's of small business consulting. But my dream at the very beginning of my company, eMyth Worldwide, was to transform the state of small business worldwide. That's still my dream, to transform the state of small business worldwide. How do I do that? By inventing the McDonald's of small business consulting. Why do I do that? To transform the life of every single human being who ever wants to go into business. And how do I do that? By inventing the turnkey system, that's what the leader does, through which I can actually provide the capability that I need to provide to a small business owner in order for him or her to be able to successfully do what Ray Kroc did at McDonald's to build his or her turnkey system for their business in order to be able to scale it and to grow it.
Wow. So it's so interesting to hear you describe it and break it down in these pieces, because it makes complete sense as you describe it. And I wonder if we could delve into it a little bit and a little bit more. And could you talk a little bit more about what is the difference between the dream and vision to begin with?
Well, sure. The dream is the great what. If you ask somebody, okay, so what are you here to do? I'm here to create a great result. There's an extraordinary entrepreneur by the name of Muhammad Yunus. Muhammad Yunus was awarded the Nobel Prize for his dream.
We interviewed him here on Healthy, Wealthy, and
Wise. Oh, did you really? Well, that's
yeah.
Exceptional. So you'll get this very, very clearly.
Yeah.
Muhammad Yunus's dream was to eradicate poverty in the world. So get it. That's the great result, the eradication of poverty in the world. How is he going to do that? How he's going to do that is to build a system through which he would provide impoverished women with exactly the amount, just enough capital, in order to fund their personal little business. Effectively, that became Grameen Bank, and it became an entire system, just like McDonald's. Literally, if I were to sit down with Muhammad Yunus and ask him to describe exactly how they do what they do, you'd come away understanding, well, that's a system, and there are standards in that system, and there are rules by which that system achieves the result that he designed it to achieve. That's the great how. So the dream is the great what, that is the eradication of poverty, and the vision is the great how. This is the great strategic how he's going to do that, by inventing a system that will enable impoverished women to be able to capitalize their own personal little business, their own personal little store, their own personal little way of freeing themselves from impoverishment. And that system was built to work absolutely extraordinarily well by the leader, and that was his mission. So first the dream, second the vision, third the purpose, the impoverished woman, and fourth the mission to build that system and then to scale it, to replicate it, and it's been replicated throughout the world.
So now, go a little bit more deeply into the difference between the vision, then, which is the great how, as you described it, and then the mission.
Well, the mission is the process by which you build the great how. So understand, I want to create the McDonald's of small business consulting. Muhammad Yunus built the McDonald's of microfinancing.
Mm-hmm.
Mission then is, so how do I build that? What are the tools that are needed? What are the scripts that are needed? What is the processes that are needed? What is the social system that is needed? How does that work? So we get down into the tactical how in the mission. So the first step is the great what, the second step is the great how, the third is the great who and why, and the fourth is the tactical how. We're going to build this little sucker. So that's when we get down to business. And obviously, in order for the dream to be realized, I need to have a vision. In order for the vision to be meaningful, I have to have a purpose. In order for the purpose to be manifestable, workable, I have to get down to the pragmatic nuts and bolts of it. And so the nuts and bolts of Muhammad Yunus' system, the nuts and bolts of eMyth Worldwide, the nuts and bolts of the dreaming room, the nuts and bolts of any venture obviously need to be thought through, developed, tested, validated. And in my book, Awakening the Entrepreneur Within, I describe how I did that, both with the Michael Thomas Corporation, later with eMyth Worldwide, then again with Manny Espinoza, and so forth and so forth and so on.
Wonderful. So, you said the dream is the great what, the first step. The vision is the great how. The third purpose you described as the who and the why.
Yes.
Is that correct? And then the mission, the tactical implementation of the system.
Yes.
Will you share with us a little bit more about the third piece of the who and the why? How does vision get translated into purpose?
Well, see it like this. In essence, the way I describe it, it sounds like a process, and essentially it is. That's what happens in the dreaming room. We literally go through this process sufficiently for somebody to get it. In other words, to experience, have an internal shift from doing it, which is what they're doing all their lives, to a sudden realization of the possibility of creating something unlike anything they've ever done before. The great result also, obviously, is speaking to who. So understand that these four dimensions are really, in their entirety, one thing. It's what I call the sudden realization or the sudden seeing. Muhammad Yunus didn't start out by eradicating poverty. He started out by walking down the street in Bangladesh when people were dying on the streets, impoverished and without food and without the ability to take care of themselves. And he said to himself, this is just not possible. There's got to be something I can do about this. And he began to do it. So the first urgency to him was that woman,
yeah,
that human being on the street. That's the purpose, that human being on the street. By inference, then, one says, the only way I can do that is to eradicate the problem, the great fallacy, the missing piece in this entirely devastating picture that is causing these women to be dying on the street. How could it be that in this day and age, with everything we know, everything we've been able to do, that we have people dying on the street in the 21st century? How is that possible? And so it then became a question, so what is it that I'm here to do? It's not just to help this woman. I need to eradicate the cause of poverty in the world. And he came to the conclusion, after studying the problem, her problem, that she simply didn't have, under the current system, the ability to finance her own freedom. She was enslaved by the systems, the financial systems that existed, the credit system that existed, the banking system that existed, the lending system that existed. She was impoverished if she participated in the way that it worked. So I obviously have to transform the way that it works if she is going to be able to live a different kind of life than she lives.
And
so all of this occurs, Chris, all of this occurs in such a way that ultimately one derives from it the dream, the vision, the purpose, and the mission. You come at it from any one of those places, but it's the dreamer who's excited by it, not the thinker. It's the dreamer who imagined something bigger than he'd ever imagined before. It's the dreamer who suddenly wakes up and says, aha, that's what I'm here to do.
Yes. Which then then somehow wakes up that whole feeling of or experience of purposefulness.
Exactly, and the process.
Yeah, and the process.
And the process. It's the process, it's the process. First the dream, second the vision, third the purpose, fourth the mission. One might say yes, but first the purpose, next the dream, one might say, and on and on and on and on. Yeah. But the way I've configured it is basically because of pragmatic reality that I'm working with people who don't have a dream. Who haven't had a dream, who don't even know what I mean by a dream. And I have to engage them in the process to discover it. They have to discover it inside of themselves.
Well, and what I hear you saying is that one can actually begin from any of these four, and they can give rise to the others. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yes, and exactly. One can begin with any of the four. One can begin at the beginning or at the end. But ultimately, one is going to have a clear picture that I've just described, that my dream is. Because until I'm able to tell the story about why my dream is my dream, what it truly means to me, why I've created this company, tell somebody what the end game is and why we're here and engaged in this, then I get lost in the detail of working for a living.
Right.
And the problem is that's what most people do in most businesses. They're working for a living. They don't know what the dream is. Nobody's ever expressly communicated, we're here to eradicate poverty worldwide. Let me tell you why we're doing that. Let me tell you how we're doing that. Let me tell you how I see it looking when it's finally done. That story has got to be told, and when you begin to tell that story, it begins with the dream, it goes to the vision, it describes the purpose, and it describes the mission, and once one sees that and is able to communicate that, we then have the absolute fundamental tools that are necessary to build a great company.
So I think you've maybe partially answered this, but the value of going through this process of really getting these four in place, you said it creates a great company, but if you would just talk a little bit about this, the difference between a business working for a living and a company that has these four elements, what is the benefit to the entrepreneur of going through the process of clarifying these four?
Well, until he's able to clarify this, he can't talk about it.
And if he can't talk about it, then he can't expand his business as well.
Well, he can't touch anybody. He can't move anybody. He can't inspire anybody. Great companies are inspirational. The minute they stop being inspirational, they stop being great companies. You'll see that companies die, and the companies die because they've lost their inspiration.
Yes.
They've lost their meaning. So, obviously, what's critical is meaning. And so what's the meaning of this? Well, the minute you begin to ask the question, what's the meaning of what we're doing? Well, the meaning is to make hamburgers. That's not the meaning. The meaning is to make a living. That's not the meaning. Because if that's the meaning, my life is dull, dry, and weary. We just simply run out of fuel. And we run out of fuel, the people who work for us run out of fuel, because we haven't done the earnest entrepreneurial work that we absolutely must do. We must discover something bigger than ourselves that drives our company to go toward greatness, some great thing that we're here to do. We all need some great thing that we're here to do. And I'm saying that's what entrepreneurs bring to great companies, especially now in what I call this age of the new entrepreneur. The new entrepreneur is driven by meaning. It's not just driven by money. Cannot be driven by money. I'm not interested in being Donald Trump. I'm not interested in having a huge building with my name on it. I'm not interested in all of that, that excessive self-serving, ego, narcissistic involvement. I'm interested, I'm determined to do something in the world that I can ultimately say change somebody's life for the better. That's what I wish to do.
You know, just listening to you, one can both hear the passion and also you get excited listening to you, or to, I think, and what you're saying is to anyone when they're connected to that level of meaning. Now, in your book, you talk about pursuing your story, and I know that that's tied into everything we've been talking about. Would you just talk a little bit about what that means?
Well, yeah. Every single company, every single entrepreneur, every single creator ultimately needs to get his story down. The story is exactly what I've been telling you. The story of the Michael Thomas Corporation.
Right.
Most businesses don't work. The people who own them do, and they're doing the wrong work. They're working for a living, and they're not really making one. They've consumed themselves with the tyranny of routine, doing it, doing it, doing it, busy, 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 busy. Most small business owners go to work in their business. They don't even understand that, in fact, that's the last thing they should do. They should be going to work on their business instead. It's all the languaging of this, the justification for this, the rationalization for this, the emotional context of this, the purpose of this, the wisdom of this, the need for this, all of that needs to be told in the story. So entrepreneurs are storytellers. Now understand, it's either a great story or it's a stupid story. Right? And you've heard stupid stories all of your life. Well, I'm not interested in being a stupid storyteller. I'm interested in telling a great story, and that means then what is the great story that I'm here to tell? And the great story underlies the entire reason for this business. If the world worked, there would be no reason for the Michael Thomas Corporation, for eMyth Worldwide, for the Dreaming Room. If everybody who started a business were successful at doing it, there'd be no reason for telling this story. Right. The story would be something else. The story would be about Donnie Dyslexic, or the story would be about guys who drop out of high school, or the story would be about women who have children without a husband to complete the loop in the family, or the story would be about all the broken things about life. The story is always about something's broken. Something is broken, something is broken. I found a way, I discovered a way, I invented a way to unbreak it.
Now, why is it always about something that's broken? Isn't it sometimes, couldn't stories sometimes be about possibilities that haven't yet existed, or no?
Sure, but they don't attract people to do anything.
Uh-huh.
So people do things because they're broken. People do things because it doesn't work. People do things because something's missing in their life. People are attracted by a story because it says there is meaning despite the fact that you have no meaning. There is something that's worthy of doing, even though you've never found anything worthy of doing. There is something to believe in, even though you don't believe in anything. If they believed in something, then they would have what they want. But there is something they don't believe in, something they fail to believe in, something that has failed to work for them. So, for example, in this day and age, right now as we sit here, we look at the disaster, the economic disaster, the profound economic disaster that exists all around us. How is that possible in this day and age? I mean, how is it possible? Well, something's broken. Well, what's broken? And that begins the story. The minute I begin to say that, anybody who has a financial or economic problem today, their ears begin to listen. What you don't understand is, and that's the success of this thing called The Secret. And if there, everybody was happy, there'd be no secret. You understand?
Right.
The secret is the secret that everybody should understand, that you can have what you don't have, but that they don't have it is what drives them to listen.
Yes. All right. Okay, that makes complete sense. And even in those... As you said, entrepreneurs are inventors, and inventors typically are often are creating things that maybe have never existed before, even if they're built on things that may have existed in the past. But those are things are always aimed at solving a problem or helping people to
always
fix something that's broken.
Yeah. Always, even if you don't know it's broken.
Right.
Understand, nobody would have ever thought of FedEx until FedEx did.
Right.
Nobody would say FedEx it. But you think today people FedEx stuff that yesterday they would have been happy to get there in 7 days.
Right. Absolutely.
So suddenly the need is driven by the capability.
Right.
To do something I never thought I could do, but wow, now I could do that. I'm going to do that.
Right.
Think about the problem, the cell phone corrected. Well, nobody really said I need to talk to my girlfriend while I'm walking down the street. Nobody ever thought that. But suddenly I can.
Right.
If I couldn't, if my cell phone doesn't work, I suddenly feel I got a problem. But before the cell phone, I didn't have a problem. So the invention created a possibility for somebody to do something they never thought they wanted to do, but now that they're able to do it, when they can't, it's a problem.
Right.
So that is how inventions are created.
That's fabulous. Now, you also talk about something you call the Golden Pyramid. What is the Golden Pyramid, and why is that important?
Well, the Golden Pyramid is at the end of Awakening the Entrepreneur Within, and obviously the question anybody's going to, okay, I got a dream. Okay, I got a dream. And people are very quick to say that. Okay, I got a dream, even though they don't.
Right.
I got a dream. So how do I grow my company? So the Golden Pyramid strategy is simply that. Step one, step two, step three, step four, how to grow a company. The first step, identify OldCo. The skills you possess are all you have. What are they? What are you able to do that others would buy from you? The second step, make a list of every single vertical niche market customer you could possibly or conceivably provide that service to. Number three, identify your trading zone. Number four, pick the 10 most appealing customer categories. Number five, pick the one most appealing customer category. Reasons are, it's a growing niche market. It demonstrates a compellingly unfulfilled need. You're already an expert in that niche market. It's a sizable market segment with no sign of weakening or diminishing in size. It's a national market segment with large enough numbers and a significant number of trading zones to warrant national expansion. It has demonstrated an interest in your capability, and it's not been identified by potential competitors, and on and on and on and on and on and on and on. Step one, step two, step three, step four. Nobody's ever built before the Golden Pyramid strategy a very simple ladder that somebody could use to grow their company. And the way in which I do it is by identifying the three stages of growth. The first is the practice, which is the DNA of an enterprise. The second is the business, which is nothing other than the replication successfully of the practice at least 10 times. So 10 practices make a business. And then the replication of the business 10 times makes an enterprise. And so you suddenly see it's just like Legos. In other words, put the pieces together, and this is how it works. And this is how you put the pieces together. And this is why you put the pieces together in that way. And this is ultimately the outcome of creating an extraordinary, world-class, mind-blowing company.
Fabulous. So will you take a moment and just share with us, when people come to In the Dreaming Room, what can they expect to experience?
Well, first of all, they're miserable. That's first of all, and they're just miserable. And they're miserable because they were miserable when they walked in. They walk in to solve a problem. Everybody walks in to solve their problem. My problem is my accounting firm isn't growing fast enough. My problem is my partner doesn't think the same way I do. My problem is we're running out of gas. My problem is we're running out of money. My problem is I don't know how to sell what we do. My problem is I don't know how to find, and on and on and on and on. Everybody comes in to solve a problem. But of course they come in to solve a problem with Oldco, and that's the company they've got. Well, the Dreaming Room is about inventing NewCo. So the first thing that I have to do is disabuse them of their perception of reality. You're not here to fix Oldco. Oldco is a waste of time. You're here to invent NewCo. We're here to look at a blank piece of paper with beginner's mind. So we're here to dream. And we're here to dream intentionally. And that is to create something that's world class, to discover a significant opportunity that is simply waiting right there on the outside of you to do something you've never thought of doing before. And that's what we're going to do here, and that's what happens in the Dreaming Room. So people walk into the Dreaming Room stuck with an old habit, stuck with an old partner, stuck with an old relationship, stuck with an old idea, stuck with an old business, stuck with a habit that they've generated over years or months or however and whatever, but stuck. They're stuck. They may not even know they're stuck. But essentially, they are. Most of us are. Stuck. The Dreaming Room is to get unstuck. And by getting unstuck, it's awakening the entrepreneur within. And that one who awakens, and that happens to simply just about everybody who comes to the Dreaming Room, suddenly life takes on a completely new complexion. Suddenly my life takes on a completely new complexion. Suddenly the passion begins to arise. I begin to be interested, not in fixing what I've got, but inventing what I want. And that's the discovery. What do I want? What in fact means something to me? What is important to me, and why is it important, and what can I do about it?
Fabulous. Great. Well, and I know for our listeners who, if you want to learn more about the Dreaming Room and all of Michael Gober's work, then you can go to healthywealthyandwise.com/Michael Gober. Again, Healthy, Wealthy, N is in Nancy, wise.com/Michael Gober. And Michael, as we come to the close of this interview, we'd like to try and bring it down to some practical steps. So can you share with our listeners two or three things that they could begin doing now to help them put into practice some of the principles that you've been talking about?
You know, what you just asked me to do is what everybody asks me to do. I've been doing that for years. Everybody says, but what can I do now? What can I do now? Let's make it practical. So the first thing I'd say is to stop. The first, most practical, most important thing any single listener listening in right now can do is to stop. 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 On the path you're on, stop. On the problem you're trying to solve, stop. Concerning yourself with where you are and what you've done and so forth and so on, and take out a blank piece of paper. So the first thing is to stop. Stop everything you're doing. It's the most important thing you can do. It's the stop exercise that Gurdjieff taught. It's the stop exercise that means, in the midst of where you are, stop and suddenly see yourself. And that sudden moment of seeing yourself and the habituated way you do everything that you do, you suddenly come face to face with the question, who am I? And when you come face to face with the question, who am I? Begin to write on that blank piece of paper. And as you begin to write on that blank piece of paper, you begin to discover that who you are is who everyone is. And as you begin to understand who you are is who everyone is, your mind will begin to discover options, opportunities that you've never seen before. And as that happens, you're in the dreaming room. And so I'm saying the dreaming room is built essentially on that. It's stop. Stop with the conversation. Stop with the voices inside. Stop, 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 stop. And take out a blank piece of paper and begin. And that's where the dream begins to become realized. And in that process, everything will change. Now, the problem is we find it very difficult to do that. And that's why the dreaming room is so important. Because we lead you to do that. And you need that guidance to be able to do that, to release yourself from the habits you've created within yourself, to discover the new self who's waiting there to reinvent your life.
Wonderful. You know, we've put a lot of attention on, during this interview, we've talked a lot about how you help others to fulfill their dreams, to be able to discover their dreams and then to fulfill them. But we, at Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise, we also believe strongly in the power of attention to manifest outcomes. And I wonder if you'd share with us your current most important project and what intention we and our listeners could hold for you.
Well, for the past year, I've been developing a project which has begun to be implemented, and it's called Chabad, C-H-A-B as in boy, A-D, E-Myth. And Chabad is a religious organization, Chabad rabbis, that has been alive and well for over 300 years. And these rabbis, and you've seen them, black hats, black suits, and white shirts, out in the world. These Chabad rabbis were inspired by their Rebbe. Their Rebbe is a tzaddik. And the Rebbe Menachem Schneerson, who's no longer with us, sent his Chabad rabbis, his young rabbis out in the world, to open Chabad houses, to transform the state of Yiddishkeit, or Jewishness, in every living Jew. And it began in the early 50s. Today there are over 4,000 Chabad rabbis out there in the world, everywhere, with Chabad houses doing this extraordinary work. Well, I met a Chabad rabbi who called me and asked me to come visit with him and some of his peers to discuss the E-Myth book and how it could be applied to Chabad. And that is my core intention, and that is to transform the state of Chabad worldwide, to go from 2,000 Chabad houses to 300,000 Chabad houses, to truly transform the Jews in the world, to create the dream that the Rebbe had of Moshiach now, the Messiah now. And that's my primary purpose.
Fabulous. Well, so we will absolutely hold the intention that you are able to enjoy great success in doing that and great fulfillment along the way, which I have a feeling is inevitable. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Well, thank you, Chris.
Yeah. What single idea would you leave our listeners with tonight, Michael?
Well, the single idea I'd leave with them is that entrepreneurship is the critical capability that will transform the world. Entrepreneurs dream. Entrepreneurs can now, in this age of the new entrepreneur, dream about creating a world that works, that isn't in conflict, that isn't struggling, and that every single entrepreneur can, in fact, find something to create for which there is a market, for which there is a customer, for which there is a need, just like Muhammad Yunus did, just as I'm doing, just as so many great entrepreneurs are beginning to do. And I'm saying that every single person listening to me today can, in fact, awaken the entrepreneur within her, within him, and discover a great cause that they can then create into a venture, into an enterprise that can, in itself, in its own way, transform the state of the world. And my mission, my dream, my vision, my purpose is to make that a reality. So they can do that. That's the one thing they can do. That's the opportunity for every single one of them to do. And all they need to do is to learn how.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Michael. Thank you for giving us an introduction to the process of learning how and showing us how it is impossible for any one of us to awaken the entrepreneur within. Michael's book, for those who are listening, again, is called Awakening the Entrepreneur Within. And if you want to learn more about how you can awaken your own inner entrepreneur and also how you can enter into the dreaming room, then again, go to healthywealthynwise.com/Michael Gerber. That's healthywealthynwise.com/Michael Gerber. And Michael, thank you so much for taking this time with us tonight and for also reconnecting all of us with the answer to that, or to be able to ask that question, who am I? It's probably the most profound question any of us can ask, so thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
For our listeners, we look forward to being with you again in 2 weeks. And remember, you can listen to each of these Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise interviews by registering at www.healthywealthynwise.com/interview. Until then, thank you for your commitment to discovering your own passions and giving your unique gifts to the world. Good night, everyone.